You're listening to Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler, February 27th, 2015. Wow, the time is flying. Interesting week behind us. God only knows what lies ahead of us. I thank all of you for joining me at the end of the week to play that inevitable game of catch-up, and there is so much to catch up on. Those of you familiar with my program, familiar with me, know that I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service. Spent 30 years with that agency, and it provided me with a unique perspective on just how important our borders and our immigration laws are. And ever since 9/11, I've taken my show on the road to do this program, to appear wherever I can. In fact, tomorrow morning at about 6:45, at that ungodly hour, I'm scheduled to be on Fox and Friends. That's New York time, 6:45 a.m. Saturday, the 28th of February. We're going to talk about terrorists living and working inside the United States. Just had some terrorists arrested in Brooklyn, in Florida. We live in a perilous world, perilous era. If you listen to the director of intelligence for the administration, he's made it clear this is the most perilous era in his 55 years of experience with the issue. Certainly, we do have difficulties, but of course, John Kerry, the man over at he's the Secretary of State over in Foggy Bottom, seems to be living in a dream world. So I'm here to wake us up, hopefully wake up our leaders. That's your job. That's all of our jobs as Americans, to get engaged with our government, make them understand what's expected of them, make them understand that we're not as dopey as they hope that we are. And that's the mission that I have been on for over 13 years now. So I thank you for joining me. I want to put a couple of websites out there to start with. Please visit them. I've been writing for a whole bunch of different people, organizations, websites. Very proud of that fact. And they're not all from one political perspective. Immigration is not about left or right. It's about right or wrong. I don't know any sensible American who joined the suicide party. And our current policies are absolutely leading this country, if I can get the words out, down to the path of our own destruction, whether existentially because of the threat of terrorists, whether it's because of the destruction being done to the middle class, By design. This is about looting America so that the people at the very tippy top of the food chain, those so-called one percenters or maybe one-tenth of one percenters, can gorge themselves even more while we destroy the American dream for Americans, weaken our nation. And just remember, if God forbid America falls from its position of preeminence in the world, it's not as though Canada, France, or England are going to be waiting in the wings to take over. We're looking at some pretty god-awful prospects. We're looking at Russia, we're looking at China, we're looking at Iran. What could possibly go wrong? First website I'm going to tell you about is my own, and why not? It is mine. It's michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R. If you go to the website, you can see all my articles there, a bunch of other stuff. Very happy to be able to provide that to you, michaelcutler.net. Also, I have been for a bunch of years writing as a senior fellow for a wonderful organization out in Santa Barbara, California. My friends at CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization, capsweb.org is their website. If you go to their website, you will see not only my writings, but the writings of many other people, which, by the way, is the case for all these websites. But if you go to capsweb.org, you'll be able to see some of my articles. My whole archive is actually posted on their website as well. And in fact, my latest article, published a couple of days ago, posted a couple of days ago, administration pushes illegal amnesty program by extorting and intimidating Congress. I have come to call this administration a thugocracy. Maybe we've got a new term here. My conservative friends get upset when I describe America as a democracy, and they always like to remind me it's a republic, and I certainly understand the significance, and it is a significance, but it's my liberal side that simply says democracy, but they say republic, and I think we're both right. It's a democratic republic. We'll split the hair. But lately, people have felt as though the United States has been turning into an oligarchy, and I think they're right. The very wealthy are getting the best government money can buy, and it's from both political perspectives, whether it's Soros or the Koch brothers. Too much money in any one location, you know, power corrupts. Wealth corrupts. It depends on the person, of course. But when people amass that kind of wealth and they start throwing it around to try to get their way, the little guys get lost in the shuffle, and the great majority of Americans are indeed the little guys. And that's who we need to be fighting for, ourselves. And before I go on to mention the other websites, I have to tell you, I find it astonishing that those folks who don't like borders, who don't want our laws enforced, I call them the anarchists, keep on with success playing to this notion about compassion. And you know what? It would make sense if every American was living well, if everybody had a car in the driveway with a full tank of gas and a full refrigerator and a great job to go to, provided that they made the effort and had the degree and did what they needed to do and be successful. That's not the case. 1 in 4 American kids today lives below the poverty line. 1 in 4. I mean, this is unbelievable. Tens of millions of Americans have left the labor force, and they don't even count when the labor statistics come out with their idiotic numbers. Oh, we got 5.6, 5.5, whatever the screwy lying numbers are. You know, figures don't lie, but liars can figure, and boy, do they ever lie. But they ignore the plight of tens of millions of working-age Americans who've given up looking for work, who've run out of benefits, and they get vilified by the extreme conservatives all too often. Oh, those lazy people on welfare. Those lazy people on disability. Well, what in the world do you do when you're in your 50s and you have a profession and you get fired? And we've seen this, especially in Silicon Valley, with those anti-American thugs, Gates and Zuckerberg. I mean, Zuckerberg created a hackathon where he was personally mentoring people to teach them how to write computer code, young people. Sounds great. Except for the prerequisite. You had to be an illegal alien. Why on earth wouldn't you do that for American kids? Why on earth wouldn't you do that for returning GIs? Imagine some American soldier, and you could, I'm not just talking about the Army now, all 5 branches of our military, come home wounded, come home missing a leg, come home partially paralyzed. I mean, the injuries are unbelievable. They're grievous, typical of what happens in war. People do get wounded and shot and suffer major trauma. And rather than see in this opportunities for American soldiers, they want to teach illegal aliens who have evaded the inspections process, leaving us at risk and undermining the well-being of American families and American workers. I mean, this is insanity. So you've got Zuckerberg, you've got Gates. If you think these people are philanthropists and you believe that somebody who puts cheese on a mouse trap is trying to feed hungry mice, Dan Rather did a story a few years ago called No Thanks for Everything, where he interviewed 3 or 4 computer programmers who were very well experienced, very well educated. One woman, in fact, had her MBA in computer science. She was a Phi Beta Kappa graduate, had previously been a vice president at a Wall Street bank, worked for Gates, comes to work one day, and they said, oh, you don't work here anymore. Well, what did I do wrong? Oh, you didn't do anything wrong. You just don't work here anymore. Clean out your office. They wouldn't even give her a letter of reference, which is the game they play to make damn sure that Americans get locked out of their own jobs inside their own country. All this nonsense about how we're going to bring the jobs home. It doesn't matter when thugs like Gates and Zuckerberg, and there are others on Silicon Valley, say, okay, great. Let's bring the jobs home, and let's bring home with the jobs foreign workers who will do the jobs for less wages. Ted Cruz, when he went before the Senate last year, when they concocted S-744, the Senate Comprehensive Immigration Reform Bill, proposed Cruz 5. Cruz 5 was an amendment, his amendment, to raise the level of H-1B high-tech visas from $65,000 a year, which is the level right now, to $325,000. He complained bitterly that comprehensive reform would have only doubled or at most tripled the number of H-1B visas. He wanted a 5-fold increase. ostensibly because, in the words of Mr. Cruz, we need to bring in the best and brightest. Well, guess what, folks? I thought the best and brightest were Americans. So it's both sides of the aisle. Don't let the label, and Cruz was right, I got to tell you, he got one thing right. Never mind about that label conservative, you know. But see, for me, how about pro-American? Because I don't consider myself on most issues to be a conservative. I consider myself to be an American. And this division of conservative versus liberal is a game. It's a game where we're fighting each other. We're vilifying each other. And while we're busy fighting among ourselves, the politicians from both sides of the aisle are literally picking our pockets and cleaning us out. Now, I mean, there's a couple of exceptions. My good friend Lou Barletta, who I think is a real decent guy and a real leader in the House of Representatives, sits on the Homeland Security Committee, Subcommittee on Borders and Ports. Good guy, former mayor of Hazleton. He enacted his own immigration ordinances to go after this Mexican drug organization that set up shop in his very quiet town of Hazleton, Pennsylvania, and of course he immediately got sued. How dare you enforce those immigration laws? How dare you indeed? Well, I was his final witness at the trial, and I'm very proud to be able to tell you that I've come to consider Lou Barletta a personal friend. In fact, I was on the phone with him a couple days ago. You have Senator Jeff Sessions. I wish Jeff would run for president. He is the man, and it doesn't matter that he's a conservative Republican, even though I'm registered as a Democrat. We need Americans in office, people who stand by American citizens, who understand what Abe Lincoln talked about when he talked about a country of the people, by the people, and for the people. Not this BS that this is about American corporations, because American corporations, frankly, aren't American. They'll put any flag of any country on that shrink wrap as long as it gets people to buy their garbage. This is about margins for profit, and they want them to go up, and they don't care the damage that they do along the way. They are destroying the middle class by design. So this is where we are, and this is why I do this program, to wake people up, because this is the information that the mainstream media won't talk about. Now, I will tell you that Newsmax TV, and I'm on very frequently with J.D. Hayworth, former member of Congress. I think he does a great job. I was just on with J.D. and Pete Hoekstra, who had chaired the House Intelligence Committee. We get to have honest conversations, and very often my segments on J.D.'s program, America's Forum, on Newsmax, run for about 10 minutes, which is a lot more than we generally see on the other programs. Fox News does have me on occasionally. I wish that I could be on more frequently to reach as many people as possible. But there was a time after 9/11 when CNN, MSNBC, all were willing to have the debates. I used to be shuttling from one TV station to the other. They're all located relatively close by each other in Manhattan. But today, you won't see MSNBC having a conversation about immigration unless it's about having Obama come on to talk about how he's going to order those ICE agents, whether they're with the Border Patrol or ICE or whatever over at DHS, do his bidding or else. Do his bidding or else. You know, I'm issuing the edicts, and they're going to enforce edicts. They're law enforcement officers, folks, and he seems to have forgotten that this man who claims to have been a constitutional scholar, constitutional professor back in college, he knows what the Constitution says, and he blithely ignores it and doesn't care because he feels he's got nothing to lose. He has no more elections to face, so he feels he's got nothing to lose. Ladies and gentlemen, we have everything to lose. So the other websites, let's get to that. Please go to, in addition to capsweb.org, as I say, I'm very proud to have been affiliated with them for a whole bunch of years. We also have Progressives for Immigration Reform, PFIR. And they are progressive indeed. They do lean to the left. Again, not left or right, folks, right or wrong. And I'm very happy to write for them. I did an extensive policy brief for them. And on the immigration issue, we stand shoulder to shoulder. You know, Barbara Jordan was a member of Congress, a very liberal woman. She was a Democrat. And the Jordan Commission came up with a report that essentially runs exactly parallel to where I am on the immigration issue and where most conservatives claim to be on, until they understand that it's going to mean that they won't have quite as much cheap labor. Some of them. Some are very good. They understand that this is the price we pay for democracy to provide opportunities for Americans. But all too often, I see where greed is taking control over our fellow Americans. either greed or foolishness. So we've got to understand that we've got to first and foremost keep America strong. We do that by building, nurturing, and reinforcing America's middle class, providing opportunities for Americans in their own country. And the other pieces can fall into place once we get that under control. You can't defend a country if you can't defend its borders. If you're unwilling or unable to defend your country's borders, you don't have a need for military. The military's primary mission is to keep the enemy as far away as possible. The military can't deal with a situation where you have millions of potential enemy combatants living within your country. Well, I certainly don't think we have millions, but I do believe we have thousands. And that's worrying. Look what just 19 terrorists did to us on September 11th, 2001. So the point being, progressives for immigration reform lean to the left, and they're right on target on the immigration issue. I have an article out this week for the Social Contract, conservative outfit. Very proud. I've been writing for them for a bunch of years, where I wrote about the human capital of the United States. The magazine this quarter, it's a quarterly, focused, and the title of it is Vanishing Resources, Twilight of the American Era. God forbid it should be the twilight of the American era. So I addressed the citizens of this country, the human capital of this country, as being the most significant of all of America's resources. And we are decimating American capital in the United States to satisfy the wealthy who simply want to loot the United States of America. Also have an article out on Front Page Magazine, David Horowitz. I have a whole bunch of articles out. Very proud to be a columnist for David. Front Page does a great job. They have an amazing group of writers. I mean, Alan Dershowitz, Ann Coulter. We go right down the list. I'm proud and pleased to be one of their many writers. In fact, I just put an article out for them now talking about Obama's outrageous demands being made on these DHS agents, threatening them, you'll do it my way or else kind of thing. I hope that will be up shortly, published shortly. They usually get my material up on the magazine in short order. And then I was just invited to write a piece for the Daily Caller that is edited by Tucker Carlson. Those of you familiar with Tucker know that he is sometimes a weekend host on Fox and Friends. I'm hoping that perhaps Tucker will do the interview with me tomorrow when I go to the studio, because what I wrote about was the political asylum issue and how the Obama and the way he's administering the laws leaves us vulnerable. And what I called my article was Political Asylum, How America's Compassion Creates National Security Nightmares, and that is for the Daily Caller. And I even included a link to an interview that I did with Tucker just about a year ago about how they have lowered the bar so that people from other countries who have had incidental contact with terrorists, whatever that means, will not be denied necessarily political asylum. And as it is, there's at least a 70% fraud rate in the political asylum program. And what is so dangerous about that is that if you look at what the 9/11 Commission had to say, they made it abundantly clear that political asylum fraud, immigration fraud, were major factors contributing to the ability of terrorists to enter the United States and embed themselves. In fact, you know, I have read in the past from segments of the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. And I came up with a couple of quotes that I've used in the past, and I want to add to that today because I think it's really important. I want you to understand that when we're hearing from these political candidates and these politicians, well, first we're going to secure the Mexican border. First we're going to get that border under control, and then we can't deport 11 million. We just heard Jeb Bush saying it. I've written about that. And I said that he was looking for love at all the wrong places because he said that coming to our country was an act of love when you violate our laws. He's delusional. This is the words of a crazy person. We need to make certain that we don't allow criminals and terrorists into the United States. We need to make certain that Americans get first shot at the jobs. And to his credit, Hannity was trying to question him today about that at CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Committee meeting in Washington, And boy, oh boy, did Jeb do a tap dance. Well, you know, conservatives believe that it's not a zero-sum game, and, you know, that we don't need a 2% growth. We should have a 4%. I mean, it was amazing. He answered everything except Hannity's question, and Hannity said you've got over 50 million Americans who are disenfranchised and not part of the labor movement, or the labor market, if you will, labor pool. They're out. They've given up. They're done. They're on the sidelines. Why would you give foreign nationals permission to work? And he went into this whole spiel, talked about, you know, this is not a zero-sum game. We have to grow the economy. We have to grow the economy how? Foreign workers, and if you go to the UN website, go to the World Bank website, it makes sense. More foreign workers making more money send more money out of our economy to their families back home. That's what we do. Look, if you could go to another country, if Australia offered you five times the pay that you're earning now, and you went to Australia, wouldn't your objective be to send as much of that money back to the United States? You'd be crazy if it wasn't. It makes sense. It makes sense for the workers. It doesn't make sense for America, because that's money being drained out of our economy. We pumped how much money, this administration pumped how much money into the economy to create an economic stimulus package after the economy went down the drain. So now it makes sense to bring in more foreign workers to drive down American wages, displace American workers, put American workers on the unemployment line, maybe cause them to lose their homes to foreclosure, cause them to go on safety net programs, which take more money out of the economy, so we can bring in more foreign workers whose goal is to send money out of the United States. I mean, this isn't rocket science, folks. You don't need a Nobel Prize in economics to understand we're being looted. And the looting is happening with the assistance of the administration, with the assistance of both political parties. See, the banks are thrilled that foreign workers come to America to work and send money home. They wish they'd send more money out of the economy. Now, if you think I'm crazy, let me explain it to you. If you were about to move to another city, let's say you live in New York and you say, wow, I've had it with these brutal winters, and boy, this has been one hell of a brutal winter. I'm going to move to Phoenix, Arizona, because I want to chase those llamas. As we saw yesterday, if you saw it on Fox News, that black and white llama, those two llamas that they were chasing for maybe an hour. So I'm going to move to Arizona. And you call up Allied Van Lines and they say, okay, where do you live? How many pieces of furniture do you have? And where are you going? Is it a private house? Is it an apartment house? Do they have an elevator? And that's what they want to know. They don't care if you have French provincial furniture or Scandinavian furniture or Italian furniture. They don't care. All they want to know is how many pieces of furniture, how far is it going to be moved? And they tell you what it's going to cost. When you go to a bank, when you go to a money remitter, the wire services, how much money, where is it going? That's all they want to know. They don't care if the money was the proceeds from a guy working in a factory. They don't care if the money was earned by a surgeon who saved a child's life. They don't care if the money was gotten by a woman who was working in a massage parlor or a brothel as a prostitute. They don't care if that money came from a drug deal. All they care is they are moving the money from point A to point B out of the country, so they can get their cut of the action. The more money that gets wired out of the country, the more money the banks make on the deal. Very simple. They don't care. They really don't. The guy with the moving van doesn't care that you're moving out of an apartment house and that the landlord can't find a replacement for that vacant apartment. You have a vacant apartment, that's your problem. All that Allied Van Lines or any of those moving companies want to know is how much money can they make moving the furniture. So there are a lot of people looking forward to seeing money draining out of our economy and driving up America's national debt, and the banks are willing to make campaign contributions. The foreign governments are willing to make campaign contributions because they want to be able to get their workers here. They want to get trade agreements that are in their best interests. And we've seen the whole controversy swirling around Hillary and money coming from outside the United States. People don't give you money unless it's in their own best interest. But when it's a foreign country, I assure you, it's not in America's best interest. This isn't rocket science. Both sides of the aisle. Don't allow this nonsense of liberal versus conservative to poison the well so we can't speak to our neighbors. They don't want us speaking among ourselves, because if we do, we put our heads together and compare notes, the politicians realize that pretty soon the American people, conservatives and liberals and independents and liberals, everyone's going to realize what's going on. So the more they can keep us isolated, separated, and fighting with each other, the more we will be kept busy, and they can be kept busy stealing from us. Americans who disagree with us, I don't care how emotional the issue may be, when an American disagrees, that's that person's absolute right under the First Amendment. We have never been more contentious with one another than we are now. If you go to the First Amendment, and everybody immediately says, oh yeah, freedom of press, freedom of speech, freedom of religion. That's right, those three are in there. There's two more in there, though, and most people don't even realize it. The right to seek redress of grievances, and we sure as hell have a bunch of those these days, don't we? And the right for Americans to peaceably assemble. Now, why do you think the founding fathers in their great wisdom, and they certainly possessed great wisdom, why did they talk about the right for peaceable assemblage? Because they understood that this democratic process was not neat, clean, or pretty. You know, somebody once said, if you saw how sausage was made, you'd never eat sausage. This is not a neat and pretty process. It can be rancorous. People can get on each other and scream and yell, and that's the process. We argue. That's fine. All they said is keep it peaceful. No guns, no knives, no clubs. Don't bloody each other, but have at those arguments and those debates and those discussions. The effort now is to shut up anybody who disagrees. College campuses, which should be the bastion of free speech, the bastion of a free exchange of ideas, have never been more polarized than they are now. There is an agenda, and the agenda is to shut down and stifle discussion. Many college campuses are openly anti-Semitic. Many college campuses are openly anti-Israel. Many college campuses are openly contemptuous of conservatives. And therein lies an interesting situation. I have spoken on three separate occasions at the Tea Party Convention in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Joe Dugan became a friend of mine. He's the guy that always runs the show down there. He does an amazing job. And he's at least a couple of weeks older than I am. Joe, if you're listening, I don't know where you get the energy from, but you do an amazing job. And I was supposed to speak there this year for my fourth year in a row, and they gave me prime time, as they always do, except I came down with miserable laryngitis and a hacking cough, and I was afraid of getting everybody else sick and not having a voice on top of it, so I decided to sit out the dance for the first time in 4 years. But I want you to understand there's a reason I'm telling you about this. Joe Dugan and all those folks in South Carolina know that I am registered as a Democrat. And nobody said to me, oh, you're a Democrat, we don't want to hear your voice. In fact, when I stood up and said I'm registered as a Democrat, but first and foremost I'm an American, I got a very wonderful round of applause. The first year I did it, I actually got a standing ovation when I said that. That's how America is supposed to operate. But I got to tell you, I have lots of friends who call themselves liberal, and I always thought liberal meant that you were willing to accept people that you disagreed with, but maybe not so much anymore. They don't want me to speak in front of their groups, even though I myself consider myself to be a center Democrat. You know, maybe in some ways I lean a little to the left, other ways I lean a little to the right. I'm a strong proponent of the Second Amendment, but on most issues I'm, you know, on the liberal side of the issues. Doesn't matter. It wasn't what they wanted to hear, so they said, no, we don't want to hear what you have to say. Don't even bother thinking of coming here to talk. But the Tea Party paid for me to go down to South Carolina and provide my perspectives. That's how America is supposed to operate, folks. And if we don't share ideas, and as a consequence, if Americans don't really understand what's going on and what's wrong, then we're not going to be able to protect ourselves or demand that our politicians protect us. And this is a very dangerous situation that we're in. So we've really got to start to work to bring all Americans together. And if there was a group of people we need to unite against, there is a group that needs to be united against. Can you guess which group? The politicians. You know, they used to tell jokes, how many so-and-sos does it take to screw in a light bulb? And I'm not going to repeat it because they always went after this one ethnic group, and I think it's pretty lousy. But maybe we should call them politician jokes. How many politicians does it take to screw in a light bulb? I mean, that's just how I feel about most of these people, but I don't think I'm alone in this. I really don't believe I'm alone in this, because most Americans have come to the very unhappy conclusion that most of the people who were elected to represent us don't. They don't represent us. They represent themselves. And many of them, in representing themselves, are actually going against the long-term best interests of their own children and grandchildren. It is remarkable how grammatically challenged these bums are. They can only conjugate verbs in the first person singular. Let me read to you this piece. And by the way, I put the article together and Front Page changed the name of my article. But the point that I had made is that we've been told ever since 9/11, and we've been told this by Rudy Giuliani, by McCain, by Obama, both sides of the aisle, we're fighting them over there so that we don't have to fight them over here. You've all heard it. There's a bunch of little sayings they came up with. The terrorists got to be right 1% of the time, or only one time, and we got to be right 100% of the time, right? How many times do we hear that business? They've got to be right only once, and we've got to be right all the time. And we're fighting them over there so we don't have to fight them over here. Well, let me tell you, I want you, if you get a chance, really I do, I want you, and it's not easy to look at those pictures, but why don't you get a hold of some pictures of lower Manhattan after the airplanes went into the two towers? And look at the rubble, and look at all those emergency responders digging desperately through the rubble trying to find some survivors. And tell me that that scene didn't look like perhaps Dresden in Germany after the Allies bombed the hell out of them after all the damage they did to everybody else. Lower Manhattan, folks, was turned into a battlefield. Look at what the Pentagon looked like after the airplane struck the Pentagon. Look at that quiet field in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Those areas were turned into battlefields by our enemies. So this notion that we're fighting them over there so that we don't have to fight them here, and then they arrest these three stooges that wanted to go over to the other country and maybe come back and do damage here, is amazing. There was an article that I wrote for Progressives for Immigration Reform about a Somali citizen who became a naturalized American, and now he's on the FBI's 10 most wanted terrorist list because they believe that he went overseas and may well try to come back to attack here within the United States. And what are they so concerned about? This guy had a driver's license and was driving a taxi cab for years in Washington, D.C. So how familiar do you think this guy is with the layout of Washington? Understands the infrastructure, knows where the buildings are, where the roads are, where the escape routes are. He knows Washington, D.C. the way you or I know the back of our hand. So it's right in the FBI's wanted poster. This guy is of particular concern because he drove a cab in D.C. And yet you have mayors across America that, like the guy in New York, de Blasio, giving ID to illegal aliens. They don't know who these people are, but here's ID. You have states giving driver's licenses to illegal aliens. An illegal alien in the hand of a terrorist is a license to kill. An illegal alien, a terrorist who can get a vehicle that's a public conveyance, makes it easy for him to conduct clandestine meetings with people he's working with. You know, as an agent, very often I would get up at the crack of dawn and follow the bad guys around. Sometimes he'd put up a helicopter. We'd have a team of agents and a whole bunch of cars. And wherever this guy went, we'd follow him because we wanted to know who's he meeting with, who's he hooked in with, where is he going. And you'd see the guy get out of his driveway 8 o'clock in the morning. He'd go zipping down the highway. We'd be following him. And we would see him go to this restaurant or go to a mall or go to someplace, and another car pulls up, and these two guys get together. Well, guess what? He's having a meeting. But if you have a guy driving a cab, driving an airport van, driving a limo, whatever, ice cream truck, the people coming up to the guy in the ice cream truck, the people hopping in the back of that cab might simply be some guy looking for a ride to a dental appointment or a job interview or wherever he's going, or could be that there's a meeting taking place in the back of that vehicle. So we're giving people driver's licenses even when we don't know who they are. This is absolutely astonishing. Just like the Enlist Act, Senator Congressman Denham from California. Let's put illegal aliens in the military. What a great idea. Now, look, there have been illegal aliens who have served in our armed forces, and some of them have been terribly injured, some have died. And I'm not trying to besmirch those people. We can never repay the debt we owe them. But as a standard practice to put illegal aliens in the military when we know that they snuck into the country is a very dangerous idea. We're giving people weapons training. And by the way, it's illegal for an illegal alien to possess firearms or ammunition. So we're putting them in the military, and we're going to give them weapons training and access to the base and give them a playbook. This is an act of lunacy. Look what happened when the United States trained Mexican law enforcement and Mexican military to combat the drug cartels. They became Los Zetas, among the most vicious and violent of all the drug trafficking organizations, not just in Mexico, I would argue in the world. And we trained them. We gave them our playbook and weapons. How many times can we do the same stupid thing over and over and over and be in shock when it goes badly? Illegal aliens should not be enrolled in our military. It's very simple. Illegal is illegal is illegal. We're spending over $3.3 billion a year on a lawful inspections process. Why are we bothering? Loretta Lynch, the woman who wants to be the next attorney general, has already said it doesn't matter how you come here. Well, if it doesn't matter how you come here, why do we have a charade at the airports? And while we speak about the airports, let me read this to you. This is what I started doing. This is in the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. This was written by the staff members, the attorneys and the agents who work with the commission. Very important issues are raised here. As soon as I get to the... Okay. Now, this is on page 47, and then I will read this paragraph that I just started working with because it really makes a clear case. Page 47 of the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. And as I read this, I want you to ask yourself, how much are they talking about the Mexican border here that we keep hearing that that's the only thing that we've got to address? Mind you, I believe we need to tighten that border. We need to secure it. There's no argument about this. This doesn't mean that I don't think this is important. It's very important. But see how many times you hear the word Mexico or Mexican border in the material I'm about to read to you. There'll be an exam afterwards, by the way. Spelling counts. Once terrorists had entered the United States, their next challenge was to find a way to remain here. Their primary method was immigration fraud. For example, Yusuf and Ajaj concocted bogus political asylum stories when they arrived in the United States. Mahmoud Abu Alima, involved in both the World Trade Center and Landmark plots, received temporary residence under the Seasonal Agriculture Workers Program after falsely claiming that he had picked beans in Florida. Then we get to page 54, and this is new. This is something that I've only stumbled upon recently. Well, not stumbled upon. I was aware of it way back when, but realized that this really sends, I think, an even clearer message. And I'm always looking for better ways to convey my concerns to as many people as possible, folks. Page 54 contained this excerpt. During the 1990s, al-Qaeda was either directly or indirectly involved in a number of terrorist plots in the United States that partially or totally failed. A study of these plots and how those involved in them moved about clearly indicates that foreign terrorist operatives were being planted in the United States and that foreign terrorist operations were being planned against Americans here at home. So much we're fighting them over there. This is what sleepers are about, folks. But we'll get back to that thought. But let me read this, and then I'll tell you more about really what this really means to all of us. Going back to the statement that's in the report, the attempted operations were valuable to those carrying them out despite their lack of success. They gave Islamic terrorists critical operational experience in entering and embedding in the United States. Although there is evidence that some land and sea border entries without inspection occurred, these conspirators mainly subverted the legal entry system by entering at airports. Do you see the point? The primary way that not just the 9/11 terrorists, but the 9/11 Commission examined 94 altogether, 94 terrorists engaged in terror operations inside the United States in the decade leading up to 9/11. And what did they say? To read it again, although there is evidence that some land and sea border entries without inspection occurred, These conspirators mainly subverted the legal entry system by entering at airports. And you have not heard anybody talk about this. And the report goes on and says, in so doing, they relied on a wide variety of fraudulent documents, on aliases, and on government corruption. Because terrorist operations were not suicide missions in the early to mid-1990s, once in the United States, terrorists and their supporters tried to get legal immigration status that would permit them to remain here, primarily by committing serial or repeated immigration fraud, by claiming political asylum, and by marrying Americans. Many of these tactics would remain largely unchanged and undetected throughout the 1990s and up to the 9/11 attack. Thus, abuse of the immigration system and a lack of interior immigration enforcement were unwittingly working together to support terrorist activity. It would remain largely unknown since no agency of the United States government analyzed terrorist travel patterns until after 9/11. This lack of attention meant that critical opportunities to disrupt terrorist travel and therefore deadly terrorist operations were missed. Think of what I just read to you. Think about Ted Cruz, think about Jeb Bush, think about Barack Obama. I don't care which party, I don't care if they're with the Hopping Kangaroo Party. Once we secure the Mexican border. So here we go. How many times did you hear me talk about the Mexican border in this passage that comes directly from the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel? Now, does that mean that terrorists aren't coming across the Mexican border? No, quite the contrary. I think that there have been, especially recently, terrorists coming across that border because there are terror training camps in Latin America, in the tri-border region of Brazil, for example. Hamas, Hezbollah, Al-Qaeda operating in that part of Brazil. So if they come across the Mexican border and claim to be from Latin America, if they've lived long enough in Latin America, it's not particularly difficult for Muhammad to credibly claim to be Miguel. Do we need to worry about the Mexican border? You're damn right we do. But is that the only problem we're facing when we've already seen that the bulk of the terrorists have come, through international airports inside the United States? You don't hear this anywhere else. You don't hear this on any other program. You don't hear this from any of the politicians. Mexican border, that's what we hear about, Mexican border, once we secure the Mexican border. They are lying to us, and they're willing to endanger national security because they're being probably, I don't know, influenced, should I use the word, by campaign contributions. This is an act of national suicide. They are deluding themselves just the way John Kerry did. I don't know how they sleep at night. I remember after 9/11, all those wackaloon politicians, forgive the redundancy, standing in front of the microphones, thumping the podium and thumping their chest. Why didn't they connect the dots? Folks, the dots have been well connected, and they still are ignoring the obvious. One more paragraph needs to be read. This is on page 98. Terrorists in the 1990s, as well as the September 11th hijackers, needed to find a way to stay in or embed themselves in the United States if their operational plans were to come to fruition. As already discussed, this could be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status. Think of this DACA program, this deferred action, and then this new one that Obama is trying to come up with, right? Temporary worker status or applying for asylum after entering. In many cases, the act of filing for an immigration benefit sufficed to permit the alien to remain in the country until the petition was adjudicated. Terrorists were free to conduct surveillance, coordinate operations, obtain and receive funding, go to school and learn English, make contacts in the United States, acquire necessary materials, and execute an attack. Is there any ambiguity to anything that I just read to you? And all we keep hearing is once the border is secure, we can give millions of people identity documents. This is an act of lunacy. And, you know, the Republicans know better. The House Judiciary Committee in December, I think it was December 12th, 2013 conducted a hearing about how this political asylum system, and this is the same bureaucratic mechanism, folks. It's not similar. It's not comparable to. It's not kind of sort of like. It is. It's the very same people, the very same agency that adjudicated the applications for asylum that are being used for these DACA programs and would be used for any comprehensive reform program. That program is so inept and so screwed up that they gave members of the Mexican drug cartels political asylum. Those same people gave the Tsarnaev family political asylum, and then they immediately went back to Russia once they had lawful status. Well, wait a minute. In order to qualify for political asylum, the alien has to claim credible fear. If you send me back to Russia, I'm in deep trouble. They hate me because of my religion, my race, my whatever, my affiliations. I'm facing at least persecution and maybe worse, maybe death. I can never go home. That's why we grant people political asylum. That's reasonable enough. I'm a big fan of it. My grandmother died in the Holocaust. I'm Jewish. I was named for my grandmother, if that's the case. But as soon as the Tsarnaev family got lawful status, they voluntarily, no one took them to the airport at gunpoint and said, get on the airplane. They voluntarily hopped on airplanes and went back to Russia. Don't you think that by doing that, they made it clear that they had lied when they applied for asylum? Nobody picked up on it. So you could say, okay, fine, look, there's so many applications that get processed every year. Citizenship and Immigration Services, according to the GAO, processes more than 6 million applications each and every year. They are overwhelmed, so they couldn't keep track. Okay, I'll buy that argument. But here's the problem. We had the attack at the Boston Marathon, April 15th, 2013. Now everybody knows that these two brothers, the Tsarnaev brothers, are terrorists. What happened to the rest of the family? Well, I'll tell you what happened to the rest of the family. About 6 or 7 months ago, their sister gets arrested. Not by immigration, which you would have thought. Their sister gets arrested by the police because she had threatened to blow up her ex-boyfriend. I see a trend here. These are explosive people, aren't they? So she's going to blow up her boyfriend and the police arrest her. So here's the question. The Tsarnaev family apparently engaged in fraud and filing for asylum. If you file for fraud or you have fraud in your application, meaning you lie, then you should lose it. In fact, it's a violation. It's a federal violation, and that's a felony. And if we can prove that you lied on the application in support of terrorism, the penalty is 25 in jail. This is pretty heavy duty. There aren't too many federal offenses that will get you in jail for 25 years. And yet, if you lie on an application in conjunction with terrorism, it's 25 years. If it's just to stay here, it's 10 years. Still a serious crime. This is not a parking ticket. You know, the lies, oh, violating the immigration law isn't a crime. Baloney. It's among our most serious offenses because it can involve national security and the safety of the American people. They lied. The sister is still there. She gets picked up by the police. Why didn't immigration pick her up shortly after her brothers got her brother got arrested? The other guy, of course, was killed on the spot. They know she lied. They know that these guys are a problem. She should have been picked up. Period. When Obama says that we're not going to arrest illegal aliens unless they're convicted of felonies, that's crazy. Because that means we no longer need to have visas. We no longer need to have a lawful inspections process. He has unilaterally taken down our borders. If you take down our borders, you cannot defend our country against an attack. It's very simple. See, when we read about D-Day, the Allies had to get behind the German lines. And we landed, but I wasn't there. I mean, the valiant Americans, unbelievable sacrifices. The soldiers landed on the beaches and faced machine gun fire. To get behind enemy lines during the Second World War, you had commandos jumping out of airplanes in the dead of night with black parachutes so that nobody would see them. You had them come ashore on submarines and boats in the dead of night. We had Nazis try to come through Long Island and Miami, same way, off of U-boats, middle of the night, to get behind the enemy lines. Do you know how terrorists view America? The enemy. In fact, terrorism has been described as asymmetrical warfare. So how do terrorists get behind the enemy lines now? They don't need to get on an airplane in the dead of night and parachute into the darkness. They don't need a boat to pull off the harbor in the middle of the night so they can row ashore. All they do is get on an airplane and fly into an international airport, especially under the visa waiver program that keeps expanding because of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, get admitted into the country, hop in a car, and begin their preparations to carry out an attack. That's how easy it is for terrorists to get behind what they would certainly believe are enemy lines. And those enemy lines are the borders of the United States of America. And when we tell our immigration agents, you will not enforce the law, even if it's the law of the land, then the president has become an obstructor. He is committing a felony. He does not have the right to unilaterally tell people engaged in enforcing our laws to ignore the law. And when you talk about prosecutorial discretion, I wrote an article back in, I guess it was 2012, when Obama stood in the Rose Garden that Friday afternoon and talked about prosecutorial discretion. I called it prosecutorial deception, because he said that they were doing this because they wanted to use limited resources more advantageously. And you know what? That is a legitimate argument if that's the case. Let me give you an example. If you're driving your car, it's a sunny day, and you're going 60 miles an hour in a 50-mile zone, nobody around you, your tires are in great shape, everything looks right, and you pass the police unit, and the guy's got the radar gun up, and he pushes the button, and he sees 60 miles an hour. It's a 50-mile zone. He doesn't chase you. The reason there is prosecutorial discretion, because he knows that you're not endangering anybody. But he knows from past experience that if he waits another 5 minutes, some cowboy will come flying through there at 80 miles an hour, and that's the guy he wants, because he's really a danger. So he allows the people to go by who are doing 60, because they're not dangerous. Are they speeding? Yes. Is it a big deal? No, it's not. It's kind of like going fishing and throwing back the small fish. That makes sense. But when you turn around and say, we're going to hire people and use resources we don't have, not to ignore people, but to give them a benefit they're not entitled to, any claim of prosecutorial discretion has just gone out the window. That's not how prosecutorial discretion works. That's a big, fat, juicy lie. So let's get serious and let's get honest about the nature of what it is he's saying and what the implications are. And either we have members of Congress who are corrupt or stupid, I'm not sure which, maybe a combination of both, and they're talking about the Mexican border. Well, I just read to you from the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel, the companion document to the 9/11 Commission report. So the obvious question that has to be asked is, why in the world did they convene the 9/11 Commission in the first place? When Space Shuttle Challenger blew up, they immediately convened the commission. Why? To figure out what went wrong, not just to assign blame, but to try to make the fixes that were necessary to make certain it would never happen again. When Space Shuttle Columbia disintegrated in the skies over Texas on reentry, same thing, they convened the commission to figure out what went wrong so it wouldn't happen again. When an airliner makes a big smoking hole in the ground, the NTSB comes out, the FAA comes out, the airline company comes out, the people responsible for maintaining the airplanes, everybody that has a piece of the action comes out. Part of it is to look to see who's responsible so the lawyers can get their cut and the victims' families can sue and all that other litigation stuff. But there's a more important issue involved here. Find out if there was a problem with the mechanicals to get the plane fixed. Find out if there's a problem with training to do a better job of training the pilots. Find out if it was a matter of somebody in the control tower making a bad decision. So you're looking to find out what went wrong so that we make sure we don't allow history to repeat itself. My father used to say to me, there was no mistakes in life, only lessons. If I was able to learn from what went wrong and never repeated that again. He said, because if you do it a second and third time, it's unforgivable. So for my father, if there was a mistake and I learned from it, it was a lesson. So we learned the lessons of 9/11, you would have thought, because that's why this huge volume of work was committed, the 9/11 Commission report and all the other reports that were issued in conjunction with it, ostensibly to make sure it wouldn't happen again. And yet when you go up to members of Congress, and this is a question you need to do, call up your members of Congress. They're on recess, by the way, and you won't hear this on TV. Oh, those lazy members of Congress, they make all that money and they're on vacation. They're not on vacation, folks. What the news media is leaving out is that if they're back in their districts, this is the ideal time to meet with them. These meetings could be more important than the congressional hearings that they sit and listen to, hopefully, once in a while. Set up a meeting. Set up a meeting with your senators. Set up a meeting with your elected member of the House of Representatives, with your mayor, with your city councilman. And when they come up with things like sanctuary cities and driver's licenses for illegal aliens, or they're members of Congress voting for comprehensive reform, here's the one question you need to ask them. This is a dragon slayer. This is the question for which they have no bloody answer. Write this down, folks. How is the legislation you are proposing, how is the actions that you are taking consistent with the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission? That's the question. That's the killer. That's the one, that's the checkmate move. There is no response. There is no response. They can't come back and point to some page in that book and say, here's where it says what we're doing makes sense. If they do it, they got to go to the cupboard and they got to come up with an empty shelf. There is nothing, zero, zipperoonie in the 9/11 Commission reports that's consistent with comprehensive immigration reform, that's consistent with sanctuary cities, that's consistent with a massive program to give employment authorization to illegal aliens who snuck into the country, that's consistent with giving political asylum to people from countries that sponsor terrorism without carefully screening them first. And right now, it's just the conservative element kind of report that we're hearing in the news media all the time, until, God forbid, some buildings start to blow up. And then everyone's going to scramble around. They're going to look like Harpo Marx with that horn of his, beep, 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 running around screaming, how did this happen? How did this happen? How did this happen? And then they're going to look back and say, oh, my God, we let in 10,000 from here and 50,000 from there. And they're going to start to look at the numbers. And then the FBI is going to talk about how they're still tracking 100 people somewhere, someplace, somehow. This is nuts. This is nuts. We live in a dangerous world. I am willing to take America's enemies at their word when they say that their goal is to come to America and kill Americans. They've done it before. This isn't far-fetched. This isn't science fiction. We were attacked in 93. There have been other subsequent attempts. You had Faisal Shahzad attempt to blow up an SUV in Times Square 5 years ago. And back then, Ray Kelly, the commissioner of the New York City Police Department, had the unmitigated chutzpah, as we say in Brooklyn, to call Faisal Shahzad, incredibly, a classic example of a homegrown terrorist. Faisal Shahzad came here as a 20-year-old with a student visa from Pakistan. How in the world is a 20-year-old homegrown when he comes here at that age? Are we that damn stupid that we're going to listen to this garbage and say, oh, well, that makes sense? If we're not willing to recognize the problem, if we're not willing to look honestly and openly and objectively at how our national security has been compromised, then how in the world can we begin to protect ourselves? There is absolutely no way to make that happen. Do you understand just how much risk is inherent in all of this? We are leaving ourselves wide open and vulnerable, folks. I would argue you can't be an effective parent if you're not involved in the political process. Good parents are very careful. Women, when they become pregnant, take the vitamins they're supposed to take, and if they've been smoking, and they stop drinking, and they may go the extra mile and only drink decaf coffee, if they have coffee at all, because it's so important that the little baby growing in the womb have every opportunity for health and a wonderful life. No birth defects, no issues, no problems. And most responsible moms are very careful about this, and they do everything that they can. And when the baby is born, after they've done all this great prenatal stuff, they take the baby to the doctor for well checks, and eventually, and we're not going to have a debate about it tonight, but, you know, vaccinations and exams. They do everything that they think is in the baby's best interest. They carefully research the best car seats, not just a car seat to meet what the law requires, but you do research which one is the safest. Maybe they trade in that small car for a bigger car because it gets better crash ratings. We go to all these extremes, and then we make certain that the child gets the best education possible. I remember they used to have the Eagle program at my kids' public school for the more gifted children, and the parents would be out there killing each other. I mean, if you want to talk about vicious fights at a Little League game, go to the school and they're figuring out which kid's getting into the Eagle program. I mean, these parents are ready to maul each other. I want my kid there. I want, you know, and it's amazing. And even when the baby's in the crib before they go to school, they're playing Mozart and they buy all these fancy toys and whatever they think they can give the baby to stimulate the brain. And we do everything for our children. We do everything for our children. And then you find out that our own government is undermining public safety. You know, it's kind of silly. These edicts about how many bullets we can put in our guns. So in New York, the SAFE Act was passed. I mean, retired law enforcement officers don't have to abide by it. We get a waiver, which is a good thing. But if you're a civilian, never were in law enforcement, you have a carry permit in New York, if you're among the very few, they only give out a handful. You're only allowed to put 7 bullets in a 10-round magazine. And if your gun has a bigger magazine, then you got to go out and buy a new magazine that only holds 10 rounds, but you can't even put 10 rounds in the magazine. You can only put 7 rounds because they look at all these shooting incidents and say, well, that's the solution. I personally don't agree with that because if you look really, crazy people, spies, bank robbers, terrorists, they're not supposed to have guns. They're not sitting there counting how many bullets they're putting in their gun. This is kind of silly. It feels good, makes no sense. It's one of those feel-good bits of legislation. You really want to go after the violence? I think everybody does. You want to go after the crime? I'm sure most people would like to see that happen. Then go after the drugs. Go after the gangs. Most violent crime in America is directly or indirectly related to the drug trade. If you want to know if the border is secure, ignore the arrest statistics we're getting from the Border Patrol. I was on Neil Cavuto's show a couple of years ago when Neil said to me, oh, arrests are down. That means there's fewer illegal aliens here. I said, Neil, that's silly. Looking at the arrest statistics to figure out how many illegal aliens are present is very much like taking attendance by asking people not present to raise their hand. It doesn't work. Well, Neil laughed. I said, if you really want to know if the border is secure, look at the price of heroin and cocaine, the availability of those drugs, because those poisons are not produced in the United States. Ladies and gentlemen, I submit to you that we are in the midst of the worst heroin epidemic that we've probably ever seen. And last year, DEA made its greatest amount of seizures in heroin, believe it or not, in New York State. 50 border states, folks, 50. Not 4, 50. And then, you know, Neil and I've talked about this before, but he said, well, they've got the drones. And I said, look, drones are worthless. Drones can't assist a Border Patrol agent. They can't make arrests. And I heard from some Border Patrol agents who were ecstatic that I made that point because I said what they should really do is get more helicopters and put more agents on the helicopters because if an agent is in trouble on the ground and they're flying over that agent, they can land and back him up. They can land and make arrests. All a drone can do is take pictures of an agent getting attacked and, God forbid, killed or maimed. In law enforcement, you want to know that you have backup on the way, and they're there. A drone is not backup. A helicopter with armed agents on board is. And lo and behold, a study was done by the government, and what did they say? They didn't believe they could attribute a single arrest of a single illegal alien to all those drones, and the drones cost as much, one drone cost, from what I was told, as much as 4 helicopters with agents on board. You would think this is a no-brainer. You know, I might see a situation where in really bad marginal weather or over some really tough terrain, you might want to have a couple of drones to provide some coverage if you don't want to endanger agents. And you say, well, the weather is iffy, and we don't want to put people up there, but we've got to be careful. Let's put a drone up. I would agree. I'd much rather lose a piece of equipment than a human life, especially my buddies in the Border Patrol. That makes sense. So maybe there is a legitimate mission for a few drones on board or, you know, on hand so that when the weather turns to garbage or there's other issues, you put a drone out there, it doesn't endanger a, you know, a human. Cool. But they're about to spend, I don't know, how many millions and millions and millions of dollars on more drones, and everybody knows they're ineffective. This is the game of deception. So we do all this to take care of our kids, and the drugs are pouring into the country. Along with the drugs come the gangs. Along with the gangs come violence. Along with the violence come people getting shot. That endangers our kids' safety in school, when they're out. Dangerous. We make sure that our children, hopefully, are motivated and we give them a great education. And now they're being made to compete with foreign workers for a paycheck. Wages are in decline. Wages are in decline. Every year, the middle-class family makes less money. How is that possible? Because they're being made to compete with increasing numbers of foreign workers. And then we find out, Jesse Vaughn over at the Center for Immigration Studies did her own investigation and found, and the numbers are still mushy, I'm trying to still pin it down, the lowest number we've seen is 5.5 million, but it could be as high as 7.5 million aliens who were statutorily ineligible for work authorization were granted work authorization from 2009 until now. 7 million possibly, maybe more. So when the president stands there and says, look at all the jobs I created, well, there's a couple of things to look at. Number one, all jobs aren't created equal. And if we're talking about a part-time minimum wage job, no one's getting out of poverty on a $10 an hour job. Okay, item number one. He's also not talking about how many companies went bankrupt, and so jobs came off the job market. They're just talking about new jobs, not the ones that were gone because companies went bankrupt because the economy is in the crapper, to put it bluntly. And, you know, he's so glib. I was watching him give a speech. There was a video because I was looking for a good quote about job creation and that sort of business. And he was in front of this audience. And folks, you really got to become attuned. You got to pay attention. You know, my thing, I was going to teach speech on the college level had I not become an agent. I started as an engineering student, wound up with a degree in communications, arts, and sciences. I got my BA and BS, if you will. And I've always done debate going back to high school since I was 14 years old. And you become very attuned to the words that people use because those words are very specific. So there's Obama in front of this huge audience, and what does he say? My administration has accomplished all this great stuff, and he goes on and on. Everyone's cheering. Yay, yay. What a rah-rah session this was. It was a love fest. And then he said something that just immediately, you know, the lights went on. Bing, and you could hear the bells clanging. Since 2000, we cut a dropout rate among Latino high school students in half. Let me repeat it and see if you hear what I heard. Since 2000, the federal government cut the dropout rate for Latino students in half, and everybody cheered. Okay, now here's my question. Why did he say since 2000? President Bush was in office then. Barack Obama didn't take office until 8 years later. Do you think it was a mistake that he said since 2000? Or do you think maybe if you went since 2008 to where we are now, that God only knows what the dropout rate looks like? This guy is very slick. And if he used 2000 as the base year, I don't think it was an accident. You need to pay attention, folks. The devil is in the details. I don't think that he referenced 2000 because of an accident. Nothing is said by accident. This is said so if someone fact checks him, he could say, yeah, 2000. That's what I said, that's what I meant, and the numbers are right. This is a job for Bernie Madoff. Maybe he's got Bernie working for him and they give him free ice cream in his jail cell. God only knows. We're being lied to on a regular basis by our country whose government is supposed to be the most transparent of all governments. And it's as transparent as a lead-lined brick wall. We have serious problems. We need to pay attention to what we're being told, and we need to learn how to ask the decisive question. And I come back to that decisive question that I want you, as Congress is now in recess, I want you to call up your members of Congress. I want you to try to make a meeting, arrange a meeting, get your neighbors involved. Have a meeting with your elected congressman or your senators. One question. Do you remember what it was? In case you forgot, write it down. Is what you're proposing consistent with the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission? If the answer is no, they are wrong. there is no longer any equivocation. There is no excuse. We are at risk of people carrying out terrorist attacks in our borders, within our borders. So, as Bush said, George W., you're either with us or you're against us. Why on earth are you talking about bringing in more foreign workers when Silicon Valley just laid off 18,000? Why in the world do you tell me that the world's best and brightest are overseas? And when they give you this nonsense, well, you wouldn't want Elon Musk to be here. You wouldn't want Albert Einstein to come here. And I get these responses. And there's a very easy answer. Of course we do. And they did come here, and the system worked. But when you talk about 325,000 high-tech workers, Ted Cruz, those, by definition, are no longer exceptional in those numbers. Exceptional means the best of the best. And most of those 325,000 aren't coming here dying to create companies to hire Americans. They are eager to come here to take a job and send money out of our economy back to their families and their home countries. And they'll rattle off five or six companies that were started by immigrants. Maybe they'll give you 10 companies. How many foreign workers are working here now that they've named 10 or 15 or even 20 companies? And we're talking about hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of foreign workers. And they'll point to a dozen companies, let's say, and say, those companies were all started by immigrants. Okay? And what did the other 697,512 foreign workers do? I'll tell you what they did. They displaced Americans. They stole the American dream from American workers and their families, and especially their children. So when they give you this nonsense of how many foreigners created the new companies, you ask them how many foreigners are working in the United States. And you'll see how much of an outrage those statements are. There are no arguments that they can come up with. But you see, if everybody hammered their congressmen that way, they would realize that we're on to them. And then you tell these cretins, listen, come the next election, don't worry about my not giving you a campaign contribution. Don't even worry that I'm not voting for you. I am going to work for anybody who will run against you, even if the guy was just let out of the Looney Tune asylum. I will go door to door. I will collect dimes, nickels, and quarters from everybody I can and make sure that you are on the unemployment line with all those millions of Americans who can't find a job. We'll give you a place on the back of that line. That's what we need to do, folks. You know, we're living in a very dangerous era. The consequences are going to reverberate through history, the decisions that we're making, the decisions we're not making. We've got to get moving. We really need to be involved. If you're listening to my program, I'm going to make the presumption that you are already highly motivated to be involved. So be effective. Be effective. If you become aware of any speaking opportunities, you can reach me through my website, michaelcutler.net. I do go around the country. I do speaking events. It's about waking up as many Americans as possible so that we can make the proper demands on these politicians who are not representing us, although they're supposed to. They are duty-bound to represent us, but they are not doing it. If they were our employees, and indeed they are, then you could think of them as being insubordinate. But my dad used to say to me that I would teach people how they should treat me by demonstrating what I was willing to accept. For far too long, we have accepted duplicitous conduct by people that were elected to represent us and our families, and it has to stop because it's crunch time, and it's really getting serious. It's really getting serious. You know, you're either part of the solution or you're part of the problem. I urge you to get involved. I urge you to make the phone calls. I urge you to... avail yourself the opportunity to meet with your elected representative, preferably with as many of your neighbors as possible, and in a very pleasant way. I don't want this to turn out ugly, because then you discredit yourself too. But in no uncertain terms, let them know that we're on to them. That's really what's necessary. Let these bums know that we are not as stupid as that they hope we are. You know, explain to them that the 9/11 Commission was very clear. Explain to them that we understand what's really going on. When they talk about income equality, make sure that they understand that you know what income equality really means to people like Alan Greenspan and Chuck Schumer. And, you know, by the way, when we're on the topic of that, and I will end with this because I want to go back over this. When you talk about income equality, why is it that the Republicans, when you say to them, here is something that you can really use to go after your opponents and say, hey, look, this is what the Democrats have come up with. You know, you would think, boy, that's a slam dunk argument. They can go out there and beat the hell out of the Democrats. They won't use the argument because guess what? They are on the same page. I know I've read this before, but I'm going to read it to you again. Perhaps this is the first time you're listening to my program. Perhaps you need a reminder. But this was part of the testimony that Alan Greenspan provided for Chuck Schumer's hearing on comprehensive immigration reform back on April 30th, 2009. I was so angry watching Greenspan testify. I was on a radio show a day later, and the young lady whose program I was on asked me what I thought of Greenspan. And I said, well, you know, as I watched Greenspan testify, I was struck by the fact that I was witnessing a first. And she said, what sort of a first? I said it was the first time I'd ever seen someone testify who was suffering from rigor mortis. She thought it was hysterical. But the thing of it is, I think he's despicable. Alan Greenspan was the architect of this meltdown. He was the architect of the subprime mortgages for illegal aliens. And I wrote an extensive article about it. And, you know, I see I've got a call. Let me see who this might possibly be. Hi, this is Michael
Hello,
Cutler.
Michael,
who am I
Cutler.
Speaking with?
Who's Hello, this? Michael Cutler. This is Steve Salvi.
Steve Salvi, how are you, my friend?
Good, and on a lighter note, I'm not sure if I'm too soon or too late to wish you a happy birthday.
Oh, my goodness gracious. You're actually a couple days early, so I thank you, sir. Very good. I greatly appreciate that. I'm a card-carrying old fart, you know?
Another good show, and I will let you finish it on that note and tell your listeners about nasty Alan Greenspan. And how,
you know, I'm trying so desperately to wake people up, Steve. You know, I'm listening to this nonsense. And I listened to how Mr. Obama can stand there and talk about since 2000, which we know had nothing to do with his administration, how he threatens those agents. You know, I just wanted to say this to you, and I'll let you go. You know what's remarkable? When I was an agent, we used to have an expression, big cases, big problems, little problems, no problems. What Obama is really doing is convincing agents by every way he can to not do their jobs, by threatening them, by intimidating them, and by issuing directives. How in the world do you protect our country with an open border and millions of foreign nationals from countries clear across the planet and no way of knowing who they are, but we're providing them with identity documents without a face-to-face interview? I'm going to be on Fox and Friends tomorrow morning at 5:45 New York time in the morning, god-awful hour, and we're going to be talking about the Somalians and their embedding tactics. And we really need to wake Americans up about this. See, that's really wherein lies the situation. It was great to speak to Steve Salvi. He's an activist from Ohio. And this is what's so vital, folks, to understand how this all pieces together, this big tapestry. So let me just read this to you. And this was when he talked about the need for H-1B visas. He started out talking about how wonderful it would be to have illegal aliens working here, the unauthorized, call them a flexible labor force. And the impact on wages was only minimal. Well, if you're talking about people at the bottom rung of the economic ladder, folks, every penny counts. You know, if you're making $5 million a year and you lose $1,000 a year, who cares? But if you're making minimum wage, or barely above minimum wage, every time you lose a couple of hours of work or your boss cuts here or there, these folks are hanging on by the skin of their teeth. And believe me, they're not middle class. They're poor. But it's very easy for a multimillionaire like Alan Greenspan to be so glib about minimal impact on wages. And it's not so minimal. There have been studies done. I mean, this is vicious. This is warfare against hardworking Americans. But then we get to these H-1B visas. And by the way, the president now, again, unilaterally has decided to allow the dependence of H-1B visa holders to now work in the United States. We are doing everything as a country that we can to displace American workers with foreign workers. On the one hand, we're being told by the politicians, I'm going to create jobs, and everybody cheers. But it doesn't matter that they create jobs if Americans don't get to do the job. So let me just read this about the H-1B visas before I wrap things up for this evening. And I want you to talk to your friends and neighbors about this, especially if they are on the other side of the political fence. I want to start a dialogue between Americans. We all need to be under this umbrella, folks, because we're all sitting in the same leaky boat. And we're being told that the solution to water rushing into your boat is to drill more holes in the bottom of the boat to let the water out. But what's amazing is how many Americans seem to be falling for that so-called solution. So here's where we go. I'm actually going to read a little bit more of it than I have in the past. So we get to the second policy issue. This is after he addressed the illegal alien workforce. This is Alan Greenspan, April 30th, 2009. The second policy issue that must be addressed by Congress is the even more compelling need to facilitate the inflow of skilled foreign workers. Our primary and secondary school systems are increasingly failing to produce the skilled workers needed to utilize fully our ever more sophisticated and complex stock of intellectual and physical capital. This capital stock has been the critical input for our rising productivity and standards of living and can be expected to continue to be essential for our future prosperity. The consequence of our educational shortfall is that a highly disproportionate number of our exceptionally skilled workers are foreign-born. Two-fifths of the science PhDs in our workforce, for example, are foreign-born. Silicon Valley has a remarkably large number of foreign-born workers. So what he's doing here is not figuring out or telling the truth that the reason we have so many foreign-born workers is because they've laid off Americans. It's the false claim that we don't have enough Americans to do the work, even as Silicon Valley just fired 18,000 Americans. Think about the lie. Think about the deception. Think about the betrayal. And then he goes on and says, the quantity of temporary H-1B visas issued each year is far too small to meet the need, especially in the near future, as the economy copes with the forthcoming retirement wave of skilled baby boomers. Forthcoming? They haven't retired yet, but sooner or later they're going to leave. There is no shortage, or there wasn't any at that point, and still isn't, but there was no shortage on the day that he made that speech. They were expecting it, so let's hire more foreign workers now in anticipation. Really? Think about what a lie that is and how harmful and dangerous this is for American families who are struggling to survive. Continuing with what he said, as Bill Gates, the chairman of Microsoft, succinctly testified before Congress in March 2007, quote, America will find it infinitely more difficult to maintain its technological leadership if it shuts out the very people who are most able to help us compete. He added that we are, quote, driving away the world's best and brightest precisely when we need them the most. Well, you know what, folks? There have been studies done, and the studies that have been done have been about how American high-tech workers are far more innovative and productive than their foreign counterparts. The foreign counterparts very rarely get patents. Americans always get the patents. Americans are the most productive workers in the world. The best and brightest, again, I submit to you, we're talking about Americans. This is about cheap wages. This is about driving down salaries, because we all know that Bill Gates is suffering mightily and doesn't have any idea how he's going to pay for his next hamburger. This is outrageous, but it gets worse. Greenspan goes on and says, our skill shortage, I trust, will ultimately be resolved through reform of our primary and secondary education system, but at best, that will take many years. An accelerated influx of highly skilled immigrants would bridge that gap and, moreover, carry with it two significant bonuses. First, skilled workers and their families form new households. They will, of necessity, move into vacant housing units, the current glut of which is depressing prices of American homes. And, of course, house price declines are a major factor in mortgage foreclosures and the plunge in value of the vast quantity of U.S. mortgage-backed securities that has contributed substantially to the disabling of our banking system. Well, let me stop and give you two thoughts here. First of all, it's outrageous that he refers to vacant housing units. These are American homes lost to foreclosure because of his corrupt banking practices with the subprime mortgages. Second, that's the reason for the house price declines and the failure of the disabling of the banking system, the subprime mortgages, whose the people who had the mortgages, their backgrounds couldn't be verified because they were possibly using false names. Totally amazing. He creates the problem and then wants to tell us how he's going to fix the problem he created and blame somebody else. This is like the congestion pricing of Mayor Bloomberg. New York is a sanctuary city, and this has been going on since Rudy Giuliani, by the way, both political parties. And Bloomberg's solution to this overcrowding of New York City is to charge New Yorkers a premium for the privilege of driving their cars into highly congested Midtown Manhattan because the streets are so overflowing with cars because of his sanctuary policies. This is like Tony Soprano charging you for protection so that he doesn't throw a brick through your window. This is crazy stuff. But then finally, we get to this last thought that Greenspan has, and this is truly infuriating. He says this. I think I'm repeating myself, but let me pick the paragraph up from here. Our skill shortage, I trust, will ultimately be resolved through reform of our primary and secondary education systems, but at best that will take many years. An accelerated influx of highly skilled immigrants would bridge that gap and, moreover, carry with it, the two significant bonuses. So we did the first bonus. Forgive me for getting the wrong place here. And that's this business about the real estate market, because, of course, if we could boost the price of houses, putting them further out of the reach of Americans, that's okay, because the banks will make more money. And Mr. Greenspan is only worried about one group, really, and that's the bankers. But the second benefit, that's the killer. Greatly expanding, these are his words, greatly expanding our quotas for the highly skilled would lower wage premiums of skilled over the lesser skilled. Skill shortages in America exist because we are shielding our skilled labor force from world competition. Quotas have been substituted for the wage pricing mechanism, and in the process, we have created a privileged elite whose incomes are being supported at non-competitively high levels by immigration quotas on skilled professionals. Eliminating such restrictions would reduce at least some of our income inequality. Think of how outrageous this is. We keep on hearing about the need for income equality, right? Income equality, and everyone is jumping about this. And the Democratic Party keeps cheering income equality, income equality. And you listen to John Oliver on HBO, and you listen to Bill Maher, income equality. And everyone thinks this is wonderful. No one's asking who's going to be made equal. Everyone's making a very dangerous and very wrong hunch here. They're playing the wrong hunch. They think that income equality means narrowing the gap between the middle class and the wealthy by raising middle class wages. Exactly the opposite is what they're talking about. And Greenspan just laid it out. He's not playing games here. Take him at his word. When ISIS says their goal is to come here and kill us, I believe them. We got to stop them. When Greenspan says what he says, I believe him also. Quotas have been substituted for the wage pricing mechanism. What does that mean? It means that if you brought in foreign workers, you could drive down the wages. You could eliminate those wage premiums. Great, huh? And talked about creating a privileged elite. The privileged elite that he's talking about, ladies and gentlemen, are America's middle-class families, the privileged elite. Believe me, this isn't about Gates, Zuckerberg, or Greenspan. So he said that eliminating such restrictions on enabling foreign workers to compete with foreign workers would reduce at least some of our income inequality. So who is going to be made more equal? The middle class and America's poor, unskilled labor, people that dropped out of high school. So what Greenspan's goal is to make certain that the guy that's got a PhD doing cancer research doesn't make much more money than the guy who's stocking shelves at the local Walmart because he dropped out of high school. Income equality. This is about the engineered destruction of the middle class. The engine, the heart and soul of these United States of America folks is America's middle class. When we speak about American exceptionalism, what's exceptional about America is that because of that upwardly mobile, vibrant middle class, which no longer exists, many other countries are doing far better. That's what motivated Americans to become exceptional. You know, they teach greyhound dogs to run, to race, by having them chase a rabbit. And in some cases, and it's really grotesque and terrible, no matter how fast the rabbit runs, they make sure that they run him until eventually the dogs catch him and rip him to shreds. It's a hell of a way to do training. But they also use mechanical rabbits at the track. And the reason I use the comparison is because someone always needs to have that incentive, the reason I'm going to run faster. That's why communism doesn't work. If I'm willing to pay you as much money to stay home as I am to go to work, why would you go to work? It actually costs money to go to work. I would argue that you could actually do better financially by staying home than going to a job if the money is the same. You don't have to pay for bus fare. You don't have to pay for lunch. You don't have to take your clothes to the cleaners. Stay home. The reason that Americans have been so productive is that literally the sky was the limit. But we can always find workers from some other third world country whose standard of living is so far down that any kind of a paycheck would be better than what they're getting. And if we open the floodgates, remember, there's always room for more oarsmen on a slave ship. So if we lose America's dynamism and America's leadership, I'll go back to what I said at the beginning of the program. The people waiting in the wings to take over world supremacy aren't democracies. They're not our allies. It's not England, France, Germany. It's China, it's Russia, it's Iran. This could be catastrophic. Also that the very super mega wealthy can make more money, and their successes will be very short-lived. They are like a cancer. See, cancer is the most effective organism, or organ, if you will, in the body of its victim. It has a rapid metabolism. It has this insatiable appetite for nutrients. It secretes hormones very often so that it can bathe itself in nutrients. The mega wealthy have an insatiable appetite for wealth. Cancer tends to starve off the healthy tissue, which is why many people who suffer cancer waste away before they finally stop breathing. But patient stops breathing, the cancer is doomed also. It's in a feeding frenzy. But in its mindless charge to get more nutrients, obviously it doesn't realize it's really sealing its own fate. These mega wealthy people who think that they're beyond all that, they're above the borders, don't understand what the world would look like if they were to destroy the United States, and they seem to be hell-bent on doing just that. We need to stand up to them, and we need to do it by going after our politicians. That is the only thing that makes sense, folks. We need to go after the politicians and lay it out for them. It's interesting. I was on an airplane ride last week. I was in Palm Springs, California. And on the way back, I was speaking with this lady in the jetway. We kind of made eye contact, and we started to speak as we were being herded like cattle onto the airplane. And she was heading to Boston and New York, and I was flying back to New York. And she said to me, where are you going? And I asked her where she was going, and she told me she was going to Boston. And I said, wow, not a vacation, I presume. She said, oh, no, I'm a cancer researcher. I'm going to a conference. And we started talking about cancer. And I wished her good luck. My family certainly has been ravaged by that miserable disease. Thank God I'm a cancer survivor. Which, by the way, guys, you get to age 40, 45, start getting your PSA done. That's what kept me alive, which is good. I haven't aggravated my quota yet. But she referred to the genes in the body that turn cells into cancer as what they now call the greedy gene. And I thought, my gosh, that's startling. Greedy. Just like Gates and Zuckerberg and all these other bums. And I said, you know, it's funny. You're comparing the gene with greedy people, and I've compared the greedy people with cancer. And she thought it was a very funny and interesting irony that we were both looking at the same kind of phenomenon, but from the opposite sides of that equation. These are malignant. These are evil people who can't think of anybody but themselves. and this is not healthy. I'm all for competition. I'm all for capitalism. I'm all for success. When some guy drives by in that beautiful Ferrari that I only wish I could drive, I don't envy them that way. I mean, it's not like, wow, I want to take it from you. How dare you? If someone acquired wealth the proper way, by not hurting people, by being honest and moral, that tells me the system works. We should all be excited about that. It should provide inspiration. But when people manipulate the system to destroy the opportunities for their fellow Americans, then that's a whole other story. We really need to stand up, do it for ourselves, do it for our country, for our kids, for their children. We need to defend our country. And it starts with defending our borders. It starts with restoring integrity to the political process. It starts with the involvement of the American people in their own government. And that's why I started out saying that you can't be a good parent unless you're involved in the politics of this era. Because if we don't rein in the politicians, they will effectively destroy our children and our grandchildren's futures, and that must not be allowed to happen. We can have our disagreements, but we need to respect each other. But we have to remember that the enemies of our well-being, unfortunately, all too often, have now become our own elected officials. They're the ones who will do anything for the proper campaign contribution. They're willing to sell their office for enough money. I actually compare them to prostitutes. I mean, there's just no other way of putting it. So let me read something to you. We'll end this on kind of a humorous note, I guess. I hope you find this fun. This program is podcast, so you can find it online. And I ask that if you like the program, if you found the information helpful, useful, get that podcast, send it over to your friends. Get as many people as possible to understand the issues, folks. This is the similarities between the two oldest professions, of course, politics and prostitution. Both professions begin with the letter P. Both professions involve lots of people getting screwed. In both professions, the practitioners will assume any position, no matter how ridiculous, uncomfortable, or contrary to common sense, for the right price. In prostitution, the clientele bring their fantasies that the prostitute tries to fulfill. In politics, the constituents bring their concerns, and the politicians respond by making promises that they fulfill by creating fantasies. STDs can give the clients of prostitutes a case of buyer's remorse, or perhaps a case of something more serious, while voters may well suffer buyer's remorse when they come to find out what their elected official does once he or she is sworn into office. Talk about the gift that keeps on giving. Anyway, couldn't resist how to add that to my little presentation this evening. I want to thank all of you for tuning in tonight or tuning into my podcast. Again, as I say, the reason I do this is to try to provide you with the information that you're not going to get anywhere else. That is the mission of the Michael Cutler Hour. Always good to join you at the end of the week. I want you all to remember that democracy is not a spectator sport. Please go to my website, michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org, Californians for Population Stabilization, Progressives for Immigration Reform, Front Page Magazine, The Daily Caller, and The Social Contract. How's that for a reading list, boys and girls? But again, I look forward to joining you next week at the same time right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Have a good weekend, everybody. Good night.